Welcome to the Gamesmith's Table Talk. This is a roundtable format discussion where I and my guests try to cover three tabletop role-playing related topics in 15 minutes. If you know anything about tabletop role players, then you'll know that this is an ambitious goal. Let's head to the table. Welcome back to our Table Talk podcast. I'm your host, Clayton the Gamesmith, and joining me are...
I'm Franklin.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Clark.
Let's head to the table.
The views and opinions of the panel are their own and do not reflect the views and opinions of any other individual company or organization. This podcast has been known to be opinionated. You have been warned.
Welcome back to another episode, and now is our next attempt to get through three topics in 15 minutes. We apparently are not done talking about playstyle. Cheryl?
Oh, yes, we've got quite a lot to talk about. We've got your min-max, we've got your power gamer, we've got your pure role player, we've got anybody else?
We touched briefly on the difference between crunch and fluff, and we could definitely elaborate on that a little bit more. Rules lawyering, something I'm kind of known for in groups that I travel.
Yes, you are.
I also have a footnote on the difference between what I'd call the hack and slash, the murder hobo player, and the more tactical player, because I think there's a difference there.
There's a big difference.
Well.
Big difference.
One thing I do want to mention, since it kind of became a theme in the last episode about the influence of the video game generation on tabletop role-playing games, I think there's a generational issue within video games as well, because... in early generation video games, combat was kind of the only way to approach problems, much like how in early tabletop games, combat was the way you would solve problems, simply because it's easy to do. It's easy to design a game based around combat. I think
go kill 10 rats.
So I think the issues we're having are with video game players coming into the tabletop hobby and struggling is because they're kind of a generation off. But we're seeing now games in more modern games, especially in the indie scene, that are emphasizing more on the side of roleplay, that are emphasizing... cooperation and teamwork. Games like Stardew Valley is a big one. Undertale is an excellent example. It's a traditional, quote-unquote, combat RPG, but you can get through every single encounter by having the right dialogue options, by finding your way out of talk past every single encounter. So I think it's kind of an issue of video games and tabletop games being out of sync with each other, and I think we're starting to see things
the effects of that
connect up as well.
Yeah.
And I especially, since I'm very, very pro computer game, do not want to come off as disparaging the video game industry for...
Oh, I don't either. I play a lot of them as well.
I play a lot of PC games, but I mentioned my pet peeve last, podcast, and I'm done talking about it.
Okay.
But I would like to switch to something that I am extremely passionate about, and that is role-playing. I am very happy to sit as my personal play style, to sit at the table and not even unpack my dice. I'm happy to... I could burn through a session after session, hour after hour, playing a game and not have to roll the dice once in order to experience the width and breadth of the character that I've created, or if in the case that I'm GMing, the entire universe that I've populated that I get to play.
Oh, definitely. I, too, am a heavy role player, story-driven person. I like... when I create my characters, they got backstory, they've got... family, they've got... I mean, I once created a character who had a family tree out to, what, six generations, was it? I had her license, her driver's license, her passport. All this I came to the table before we even played with it.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest factor for me, and as I mentioned before, I really like a balance of game mechanics, tactical combat, balanced with, of course, the role-playing aspect of things. But if I had to choose, I would certainly go with the deep immersion storytelling part of the game, because that's what really brings you into the whole fantasy world. That's what, the healthy escapism of the whole hobby is about, is being able to play a fantastical, heroic character.
Yeah, being able to immerse yourself in that character, and in a sense for a few hours become that character, is really, really powerful.
I think, as well, I think part of the reason why I've seen a shift in tabletop games towards role-playing is that role-playing is the thing that tabletop games excel at more than any other medium. The tactical side of things, the power fantasy side of things, the horror side of things, you can get that fix somewhere else. but there is not another medium that does role-playing as well as a tabletop role-playing game with other people sitting at the table.
And I actually have to say, I really appreciate you saying that as a younger guy, Franklin, definitely growing up in the video game generation, is the experience of sitting around a table with four friends playing a game with dice and munchies and character sheets and whatnot hasn't changed since the early 70s. You know, at the very origins of
why did you look at me when you said that?
The great part about the storytelling playstyle, the role playing, is the storytelling. And it doesn't come from one person. It doesn't come solely from the GM, but it's a mixture of everybody.
It is
telling a story.
It can't exist without everybody at the table buying in and participating in it.
Yes.
If I'm trying to tell a story and you're like, I hit it with my axe. Well, okay. Well, now there's a conspiracy between, yeah, I hit it with my axe.
Exactly.
Like, where? Okay, we're done.
Yep.
Because I cannot tell a story in that environment.
And I think that's the beauty of tabletop games in general, is it is a shared experience. It's not just running through a predetermined world that the GM has created. You actually help create the world just by being involved in it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think at this point we've now kind of talked about the role player.
Yes.
To bring things back to different types of play styles. I mentioned earlier I wanted to talk a little about the difference between a tactical player versus what I'd call a hack and slash player or a murder hobo, as other people have said. I think the difference there, and as I said previously, there's no right way or wrong way, but you just have to be aware of what you want, what the itch you're trying to scratch is. I think the difference is how much you care about the challenge of it. A murder hobo just wants to kill something and be done and then go kill the next biggest thing. Whereas the tactical player is about the journey of it all, the actual move by move, the complex mathematics and the statistics of, okay, well, I've got a half point average, or you know, my extra,
they're trying
my
to extra eke out that bonus extra plus here. One.
As far as tactical games go, this is where PvP games really, really start to shine. Be it Warhammer, be it any of the competitive video games that exist recently, because you're matched up against someone of your own skill level or better, and you have to push yourself to improve. I don't know if the hack and slash player is really looking for that, and I absolutely fall into both categories depending on my mood. I have games that I play for no other reason than I want to just run through and kill people and feel good and powerful and strong, but I'm not really looking for a challenge in that moment.
Right.
Absolutely. I would agree the tactical role style is way different than the hack and slash. The tactical is more looking for the advantage. What advantage does this rule give me in this specific combat? If I do A, what happens? If I do A and then B happens, then I'll do C. They're the type of playstyle that's usually two or three steps ahead in the specific encounter. They're almost never the person that when you're going around the table, they're like taking 5 minutes to do a round. They've already got their thoughts all mapped out. What do you guys think? Is that accurate in your opinion?
I'd say that's accurate.
I would say that just within this discussion, it's really opened up my view on playstyles, because I had a very black and white perspective that it's combat versus role-playing. And that's always what I've considered playstyle to be. How much tactical, grid-based gaming are you doing compared to how much actual role-playing your character? But I see it encompasses so much more than that. How much heroics are involved in your game? What does the setting lend itself more to, like a gritty urban play style? Is it more of an open sandbox world building? But I would still say the first thing I think about with play style is how much tactical as opposed to how much world building you're doing through your role playing.
And I think you've touched on something important there, and that there absolutely is. There's a gray area. There's ways that they bleed into each other. I think anyone who's played, even, you know, if we take games that are completely and totally divorced from any form of roleplay, things like trading card games, competitive video games, you can design the systems, you can design the mechanics of your system and the tactical play to create certain feelings. I used to play trading card games, and different decks would feel different to play. Some decks are more aggressive, some decks are more controlled, some decks are... There's no roleplay element to it at all, but you like the feeling of different things, and so the mechanics can absolutely inform the roleplay of the character. And vice versa. You create the character and you choose the mechanics that suit it, or you choose the mechanics that you like and create the character to suit it. or some hybridization of the two. I kind of take the middle ground where I'll start with one core idea and I'll build on it, but I'll think, oh, I want to take this feat because it's really good. How do I change my character's background and history and personality to suit the fact that they have this ability? Okay, well, now what's the next piece I'm adding on? Oh, wouldn't be an interesting idea if they did this? Well, then I'm going to add this feat to represent that.
Yes, and that's also a big pull for me is the puzzle-solving part, right from character generation. How can I create something that can withstand all these different encounters or be able to handle myself in different situations?
Two things. I think Franklin just volunteered for a neuroscience experiment. So if there's any listeners out there who want to hook his brain up to an electrode to discover his feelings about different decks, send me an email. I'm interested in something that you said earlier, Clark, because you're the newest player to our table, and I'm interested in terms of the play style. Has your play style evolved or changed or been absolutely modified as a result of the adventures that we've played together so far?
I would say definitely my experience with this group specifically, I was coming from a background of definitely a more hack and slash character A goes into room B type of play style. Whereas I've always craved that storytelling, the deep immersion into that fantasy world kind of feel. So yeah, it's definitely satisfied my need for a more story-based game as opposed to something that was strictly more tactical. And I think that's also a reason why I am drawn to tabletop games as opposed to, say, a video game or a trading card game, is there's a social aspect. There's definitely a satisfaction in seeing a concept that you have created become part of the game world or your game master, including your idea in the design of the adventure that he's presenting to you.
Absolutely. As you may have noticed, we've touched very much on the fact that playstyles can definitely bleed into each other. I would posit a few people that are just one playstyle.
And that's Franklin flat out said, depending on my mood.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's other playstyles that we haven't touched on. We haven't touched on the min-maxer, the power gamer.
I would like to make a defense of rules lawyers, as I absolutely am one. And I feel like we get a lot of hate on the internet.
So, defend yourself, sir!
I think, speaking as a rules lawyer, I think the thing about it, the thing about rules lawyers is, as a rules lawyer, my interest is in the rule system itself. I sit down and read systems that I have not played or never will play. I follow tactical discussions of games that I don't play because I'm curious about the design and the way that people have created these rule sets. So when I'm rules lawyering, it's because the developers are trying to create a specific experience and the rules exist for a specific reason. And when players are going against those rules or ignoring them, it changes the core experience.
Now, as a person who's had a long history of role-playing, I run into a variety of rules lawyers. What I would like to say on that is one of the reasons I think that rules lawyers get such a bad rap is the different people who come across with it. There are rules lawyers who will stand up and yell at you.
Because you're playing the rule wrong.
You're playing the rule wrong.
I absolutely agree. There definitely is a right way to rules lawyer and a wrong way to rules lawyer.
I mean, at our table, if we're going along, we reach a rule that we have like three different versions of it. 9 times out of 10, we'll go, Franklin, what's the rule? Because we know he knows it.
Myself, I'm definitely more of a rules as intended over rules as written player. But I definitely prefer playing a game that's kept within the rule set that's given. I find it very akin to almost like cheating at a game. If you can stretch the rules to the limit but remain within the system, then it gives boundaries to what a character can and cannot do.
So, in closing, rules lawyers are good for your game as long as they understand that they're not there to enforce the rules totally.
No, that's my job.
Right?
And as a word of advice to my fellow rules lawyers out there, if you want to have productive gaming relationships with your fellow gamers, always take a moment and consider why you're bringing this up. Why is it important? Because the rules serve the experience. The rules are the foundation of the experience. If the rule is getting in the way of fun, then it might be time to let the rule go or discuss a home rule.
Very much so.
Talk about it with your table. Say, all right, the rule is this, but we're in a circumstance where the rule doesn't really make sense to what's happening in the game. Is it time for a conversation to change the rule? And realize as a, because part of my my experience as well as a GM, I write third-party materials of varied magic systems, classes, archetypes, things. Always communicate that. Always communicate the rules with your players, because there's nothing more frustrating than not knowing the rules that you're playing by.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where the frustration comes from as a rules lawyer, is looking at a system and realizing that you're playing by a different set of rules than everyone else.
Absolutely. We've gone over time here.
Yes, we've gone way over time. I'm so glad we got through three topics in 15 minutes.
We didn't. We didn't even get through one. No, we're still talking about this.
This is our second topic overall.
I was being facetious.
All right, well.
We'll see you next time, folks.
At the table.